Welcome to the Women Who Fights podcast. We empower female fighters to take full agency over their training. Our goal is to celebrate and inspire others with the incredible action women and allies are taking to level the playing field. We talk to experts, uncover prejudice, and champion what's driving our progress.
And today we have Amy Campo with us. Amy started Jiu-Jitsu in 2013 when she was 13 years old. A natural talent, Amy has had many achievements, including winning the first place at ADCC 60 plus category last year in 2022 with an incredible performance. Amy's fighting on Polaris in this week on Saturday, the biggest UK grappling invitational on the first women's Grand Prix. And we're very, very excited to talk to her about it. So, Amy, talk to us a little bit about your beginning as a jiu-jitsu athlete. You started when you were 13. How quickly did it become your full-time career, full-time job?
Okay, so I started when I was 13, and I think I really liked having something to latch onto, and I naturally gravitated towards just spending a lot of my time at the gym. I actually started with all three martial arts my gym was teaching at the time. I started with Muay Thai kickboxing, MMA, and Jiu-Jitsu. So for the first couple of years I was training, I trained all of those classes as often as I could. And I really spent majority of my time at the gym, and only on the weekends would I go hang out with other friends and things. So I guess as far as time commitment, I've acted like I've been incredibly serious the whole time I've trained. But the past year or so is when I started to, and it just kind of happened organically, where I started to have more of my time be placed in jiu-jitsu. I was working part-time, and I was going to school either part-time, three-quarter time, or full-time, depending on the semester. And a year ago, working was conflicting so much with my school schedule. So then I had to take a break from doing school for a second because I was having a lot of challenging classes, and I knew this semester I would be, this is the semester I took a break from school, and I knew I'd be doing a lot of competing and traveling, and there'd be just more going on. And I'd never taken a break from school, so I thought, okay, you know, I'll take a break and I'll focus on this for a minute, and then I'll jump back in it, you know, summer or fall. But I've always done all those three things together. But as far as like how much time I've always put into training, that's always been consistent across the board. And in the summers, when I was in high school, in the summers I would be able to train twice a day, and that's how often I could train. And the training in the evening is like, there's usually two or three classes back to back, so I just roll into one of the other classes afterwards, and I guess you could say I hit multiple trainings a day in that way too. But for me, it was just like, oh, just training, you know, 4:30 to 9:30 or 5 to 9 or whatever.
Wow.
And so did you start competing straight away in like the other martial arts as well? How did your competing career evolve in that time?
Oh, okay. So I didn't compete until like I was a year and a half into training, and like I had planned to, but some of the tournaments, all of them had ended up falling through for some reason or another. So I ended up competing about a year and a half, 2 years in, and you know, I tried it and I thought it was fun. I really didn't know how I was going to do, and coach is like, you'll do fine. And I was like, okay. So I competed and I loved it, and I was like, when can I do it again? We planned on the next one, and just over the next couple years we did a couple tournaments, like just little local things. And then he's like, you know, you should give it a shot going to some of these more advanced tournaments that are like multi-state level and even nationwide. So I started doing a little bit more of the IBJJF tournaments, and I just kind of turned into, okay, I did okay at this one. Let's try for another one. Let's try for a bigger one and see how you do. And kind of started to find where I fit amongst like the world level of jiu-jitsu. And I'm still trying to figure that out, actually, where I fit in the world level of jiu-jitsu. But that'll be a process I imagine will just continue. I'll try to find the next thing to challenge myself with and the next ways that I can grow.
Did you have to wait, Kat, through any of those tournaments?
Some of them I did. Just a handful of times that I'd actually have to weight cut. Most of the time I could just watch what I was eating and I could diet down just a little bit. And I got better at that as I practiced that.
Yeah. So that you didn't find that a challenge?
As far as the steps you need to take physically, it's not too bad physically. There is a mental aspect of cutting weight. Oh, great. Like there is that aspect of it. And the mental aspect contributes a lot to your fight, too. So I think depending on how much you let your necessary steps to weight cut affect you, I think will depend on how much it affects your performance. As well as, you know, it takes a little bit out of you. So, you know, you're probably not as strong as you would be otherwise. But who knows, you know? Who knows what the mind can do?
I mean, that's quite an interesting thing. I'm glad we think we'll definitely want to talk to you about later, like your mindset. But before we get there, so you were talking about how you were going to school and working, and then you went to school and you were managing training around that. And now are you training full-time?
For this semester, yeah.
Okay. And what does your normal, what's a training day for you? What does it look like?
So really as many trainings as I can get in a day while keeping like healthy and balanced. But usually an optimal training day looks like I wake up and I either hit some studies or I go run or weightlift or some sort of cross training. And then there's a second class and that's just on my own. And then my coach has a morning training. And depending on the day, I can hit the morning training or not, you know, if I have something else I need to do too. So I'll just figure out what I can do. And then in the evening, there's usually a couple of classes in the evening that I could hit. And I would usually end up doing jiu-jitsu for an hour or two in the evening. And then if there was another like striking class afterwards, I could follow through with that. But mainly it's just been coming in and teaching a little bit before I train and then doing my training in the evening for a couple hours. And that was, you know, then, you know, you have your like rehabilitation stuff, like stretching and stuff. And I don't know, I don't necessarily consider like stretching and yoga as a part of that part of training. I consider it more as a part of the rehabilitation part of training. And they're all training, but I kind of put it in that category, like developmental and recovery categories for training. So that's what a typical day would look like for me. Every now and then I get to plan on some other like cross training sessions here or there, and just when I can and what works. That's my normal day though.
Nice. I mean, is that something that you've like developed? Is that something that you've worked out yourself, or has that been have you had advice about how to sort of work? Because obviously one can overtrain, you know, and if you're doing it several times a day, how do you manage that? And yeah, did you get advice?
So I think the way that ended up developing is, one, it just kind of ended up developing around coach when my coach Eddie has his classes. You know, when I was a teenager, it was like I was in school. I usually had some sort of lifting and PE class, so that was like my morning. And then I would get out of school, and in the evening I'd go train for a couple of hours. And then as I got out of high school and had a more flexible schedule with college, then I could do some lifting on my own or have it as a class. And then I had more opportunities to attend the morning classes as well. And depending on what my schedule has been, I've been able to do that. And then the evening has always pretty much been the same.
Right. I would love to ask you about your psychology when competing. So let's say you are preparing for a tournament or for a big grappling show like the one this Saturday. How do you work on the mental aspects, on the nerves that you might have prior to that?
Okay, so like during the training phase.
Yeah.
So I have not been a stranger to being really anxious for training before, and I don't think anybody who competes is. You know, as the training gets harder, we're all like, you're dreading going because you know it's going to be hard, you know it's going to be brutal. But I think to deal with that anxiety is I had to start doing like some mental practices where I would kind of look at my situation objectively. And I think have a couple of strategies I'd use. One is I would remember why I'm doing this. I would put it this way. Remember the truth. Okay, the truth about why I'm training is I like training. I actually like doing this. So I try to remember, hey, this is something you enjoy doing and you like this, and this is something you want to be doing right now. You know, these are the goals that I'm wanting to achieve, and putting that intention into training is really helpful for negating some of the anxiety. And it's going to be there, but, you know, part of the anxiety you can accept too, because you're like, you know, I want to get better, and this push or this pressure is going to make me better, and that's actually what I want. Okay, so I can accept that a little bit more. Yeah, remember the truth. I'm here because I want to be here, and I'm here because there are things I want to learn and grow in, and I like this. So that helps get rid of a lot of anxiety. Now, there's another thing that I also practice, and it's called keeping the trash out. In like fun terms, that's what I'd call it. And anytime I have this gatekeeper for my mind, I know what my goals are. And anytime I have something enter my mind that supports those goals, I let it stay. And anytime something comes into my mind that is against those goals, or that is negative or destructive in some way, I immediately check those, kick them out, delete, autocorrect, whatever, it goes away, and I input the truth that I need to be reminding myself. So in that way, I'm able to not let things stay and take hold in my mind. And if you can get to the point where you've checked yourself so much that you don't have things cross your mind very often, great, that's better, that's even more developmental. So, bad comes in, bad gets right out. Input the good. Good comes in, great. I need to remember those things, I need to focus on those things so I can get to training and I can enjoy this development.
How did you come up with that? Did you seek any help on techniques how to do that?
No, I didn't really have, I mean, I heard the phrase at my gym, keep the trash out. I heard that, but I think it grew. Like as I practiced with this, and as I learned more about like recognizing what I was thinking, then I was able to be like, okay, how do I think that's actually helping me? I just kind of organically, as I trialed and erred, figured out how to control my mind and how to gatekeep what comes in and out of it. No, I didn't have any formal coaching on this. And I think spirituality helps a lot with this. It helped a lot with the mindfulness and the connection and the awareness and just the intention behind, okay, what do I want to be? What do I not want to be? And how do I make sure what I think, what I say, what I do align with those things truly?
Absolutely.
That's very interesting.
And just before you step on the mat as well, how do you think about your opponent? Like how, when you're in that moment and you're about to step on the stage in front of X amount of people, what's going through your head? Is it quiet, or is there just yelling? What's going on?
Do you want me to talk about Gabby in specific?
Yes.
Because that's a pretty good example.
Yeah,
of,
that's a really good one.
I think when I'm at my best, and that this happened in the trials and this happened in ADCC too. I wasn't very nervous. I think I did the same thing where I was like, okay, remember the truth about this. What is the truth about this tournament? I'm going to learn something great here. I'm going to do something great here. And I'm here for this great experience. And I know that if I go out right now, that's what's going to happen. And especially the more I can apply myself, the more that's going to happen. So before I went out to fight with Gabby and to fight with Rafaela, I was thinking in my mind, you know, I might have been a little anxious, maybe a little bit, you know, because you don't know what the outcome is going to be. But as soon as I thought, you know what, this is where I want to be. This is what I want to be doing. This is exactly where I should be. And as soon as I thought some of that stuff and I felt like my perspective was aligned with truth, all of the anxiety or nervousness, if there was any, it just left. And I was just left with this excitement, like, okay, now let's see what's going to come out of this. Let's see how this is going to go. I'm going to try my best. And no matter what, I'm going to take home a great experience. And I'm excited to see what that looks like. So in that way, I was able to remove pressure. I was able to remove too much nervousness and anxiety. And like, if there was a chance for doubt, you know, now it's all gone because I'm just in a perspective of truth and seeking.
I think.
And that's what I do.
That's amazing. That is so unbelievably wise.
Thank you.
So let's say I just really want to understand the way you think. So let's say you're in a fight and it's very tight, right? And you need to turn it on, all right? What are your thoughts? Or if you're in a fight and you're not actually on top scoring wise, and you need to turn the gear up, what's happening inside your head?
Okay, so if I haven't like woken up to the fight, or if I'm in the middle of a fight and I realize I need to step it up. Okay, those are two mindfulness or consciousness or awareness practices. I think the more aware you can be of what's needed in the fight, you can bring that out of you. Okay, those are two slightly different scenarios. So if I need to wake up for a fight, one, I need to warm up well, and I need to have my mind be focused. And the mental checks of what's going on in my mind, that helps with the mental focus. And I think focus is like, how do you describe getting into focus? I feel like as I progress through the week towards the fight, my focus narrows more and more towards the fight and like everything I need to do to be prepared for the fight. So it gets to the point where at the end of the week, I'm thinking so much about the fight, where I'm wanting to focus so much on being ready for the fight, maybe not the fight itself, but being ready for the fight, that sleep and food and other basic needs become a second thought because I'm thinking about being ready for the fight. And I know that my training has prepared me well enough that I don't need to be thinking so much exactly what I'm going to do in the fight, but I'm just being ready to fight and being willing to fight whenever I need to. And I think giving you those days to be focused helps you be focused when you're there. And if you're not focused when you're there and you're just kind of zombie fighting, that might not be the best or at least the most intentioned or the most willingness of your fight, because that seems like you're a little reactive, which is, reactive is a good thing, but intentional, I think, might be a better thing. Now, if I'm in a fight and I realize, oh, okay, there's 3 minutes left, I'm behind, or at least I need to ensure that I'm going to win this, then I can consciously make that decision like, hey, I need to give more of myself to this to be able to accomplish the goal of, you know, winning or winning the match, or this is what's needed. If I can recognize that, okay, I can consciously choose, hey, I need to give more of myself to this. And I need to do whatever it takes to make it to that point. I need to not stop until that goal is accomplished because we're on the time limit. And so with all that being a choice, a conscious choice, you can be willing to, hey, you know what? I'm not going to stop until the fight's over. I have a mission I need to accomplish with this part of the fight, and I cannot stop, and so I'm not going to stop. And I think that's helpful, because another thing I've heard people talk about is they will get close to the end of the fight, and they'll think, oh, I'm close enough to winning. I can just ride out the rest of the fight. And when your opponent senses a slowdown in you, they're going to pick it up, and there's a chance that they're going to switch it on you, and you're going to win at the end. So you can't give them that chance. So whether you're losing or whether you're about to win, you cannot stop until it's over. And why would you? Like, it's going to be over in 3 minutes. Just give it your all. Like, you'll be fine in 3 minutes. Just be willing to suffer and willing to do what you've got to.
I love that.
I guess I'd say I consciously choose to apply myself more. And I do the best that I can.
Wow. I mean, had you prepared for Gabby? For fighting someone so much, sort of so much heavier than you?
Yes and no. Had I prepared for fighting her specifically? Very minimally. Had I prepared in other ways, like in training, had I prepared for fighting somebody bigger? Yes and no, because I train with the guys all the time, and some of the guys are bigger and some of them are stronger than she is, so that's a normal thing for me. And with that being such a normal part of my training, you know there are some things you do and you don't do with bigger people. So I just took that knowledge of things that work and things you don't do with bigger people into my fight with her. And it's like, okay, first of all, I'm not going to do these things. These things generally tend to work on bigger people. One of those things is like the bull mentality. Bigger people are stronger and they're going to come forward and try to pressure you a lot because they're stronger and they're big. And they don't even have to try. That just happens. They're bigger than you. And so I know a lot of your tactics with somebody bigger is a lot of practicing getting out of the way, using more speed and movement to get out of the way. So that was a concept I took into fighting with Gabby. Like, I know she's going to come forward, move to the side, move out of the way. And all takedowns that go along with those concepts, I knew we're going to have more chances of success. Now, we did know a little bit about Gabby. My coach told me that she lets you shoot on her and then she squishes you. And I was like, well, don't do that, because not very many other people are having success with that. So I'm going to learn from their mistakes and not do that. So I just didn't do that. And close to the end of the fight, I was like, okay, I'm going to have to open up more and do more shots. And so I started taking a couple more shots, and I was able to pick up her. I made sure I did it in a safe way where I could back out at any point if I needed to, because I don't want her on me. And I was noticing I was picking her legs up, and I was like, this is working. And then towards the, like, I was like, oh my gosh, it's working. And then towards the end of the fight, she was pressing forward, and I just did exactly, it worked out so well. The concepts that work with a bigger person happen to be some of the things that are just me, like some of the things that I do well. You know, I'm not going to go into a fight and try to be somebody else. I'm going to go in there and try to do what I do well. Mm. And it just so happened that what I do well is also things that happen to work well against bigger people. So I liked the arm drag single. She was pushing. I was like, 1, 2, 3, arm drag. I moved out of the way. She went down. I was like, she's down. I got to get on top. I got on top.
I remember you got on top on the concrete. I remember you were like, I'm on. I felt like I was watching you, and I was like, I can feel exactly what's going on in her head. She's like, I'm on. I'm not getting off now. I'm on the concrete. I don't care.
Yes.
The whole arena was with you that night.
Probably. Yeah, she just went down, and I was like, get on top. I need to get on top. That's my only mission. I think I was vaguely aware that we were off the mats, but I had it in my mind already that it's okay to go off the mats. It's fine. You don't stop. So I was like, go. And then I got on top, and I was like, okay, what now? And this is all happening in a split second. Like, okay, I'm on top. What now? Pass. Okay, pass. Mount. Okay, attack. So I got on top, and I tried to armbar, and I'm trying to get her arm, and the ref's like, comes and stops me, and I was like, what's going on? And he brings us over to the center, and he says, okay, we're going to go to overtime. And I was like, what? Did I not get any points for that? Like, you let us keep going on the ground for a minute. I hope I got points for something there. And he's like, oh, wait. He went and talked to the counters. And they started messing with the points. And I knew at that point that I was going to get points. And so I was like, okay, the fight's over because I'm going to get points. And as soon as I realized, I was like, okay, the fight's over. I'm going to go. I went and shook her hand. She didn't see me. I thought she didn't see me. So I was like, I'll just wait. Eventually she saw me and shook my hand, but we still have the meme of guillotine versus guillotine going on. And yep, then they raised my hand and my team's freaking out, and I was just like, oh.
It did happen so fast. It was like, I think I was watching at home, and I think we were all just like, wah! Like, it was amazing. It was amazing. Amazing to watch.
Thank you.
So, moving on to our another question. What's, like, as a woman training in a male-dominated sphere, like, have you experienced anything, like, is there any sort of weird behaviours you've had to deal with in your time? Especially, you started so young, so you're really coming into it as, like, a young woman.
Mm-hmm. anything weird. What do you mean by weird?
I don't know. I mean, like...
Weird for, like, being a woman? Or yeah. Or weird for, like, I encountered weird things with men? Or...
Yeah, I mean, either.
Okay. Hmm.
Well, so you don't have to share.
No, I'm just thinking, like, there's a couple different categories of weird. Like, I've had a couple times where guys have been weird. Like, I let this new guy come in, and this is before I learned that you'd be very careful when you roll with new people, like white belts, because they're called crazy white belts for a reason. Anyways, I let him pass my guard, and I think he was just really mindful about breathing, now that I look back, but I did not get that. So I let him pass my guard, and he's in north-south trying to hold me down, right? He's brand new white belt guy. I'm like a brown belt. So I'm just like helping him learn, and his face is right on my neck, and he's like deep, heavy breathing through his nose on my neck. And I was just like, ah, get out of here. So that was like a weird thing. Sometimes I'll have like weird comments. Just like a couple weird, I have some weird comments. I had a guy one time say, I got him in a scissor leg choke from a kimura. And he's like, your legs are like two giant anacondas. And I was like, oh, wow. So there's that category of weird. And like, wow, this is really interesting. And I don't know, another category of weird. Weird for a woman. Like, I've always been competitive and like wanted to... Like, I know a lot of women feel like they have to prove themselves because they are a woman. And I suppose I felt a little bit of that. And I didn't have a problem with that, really. Like competing and trying to do well is, like, I'm very competitive in nature. And to compare myself to guys, I just took that as, like, a little challenge. And I know I'm not exactly like a guy, so I wasn't, well, I don't know. I was still mad at myself if I couldn't do things the guys would do. But I think I would just try to aspire to some of their capable levels, like some of their athleticism levels or some of the heart and the grit that some of the guys display. I think I would just see them do that and be like, okay, I want to aspire to do things that way. But I never took it in a sense that I've recently learned that some women do, where they take it as, I'm not good enough to be here. Like, I don't compare enough to you. I'm like an imposter in jiu-jitsu because I'm not like you. I never took it that way. I always just thought, oh, okay, I can try to do it like you. And yeah, I've had my share of being frustrated when somebody's bigger and stronger than me. But, you know, when I thought about that, guys deal with that too. Like, they're frustrated about a guy being bigger and stronger than them and throwing them across the mat because they just are... So some of those things are interesting and they're strange to deal with, but I think I've just been content to progress with myself and to challenge myself, and I never let myself feel like, oh, you're not good enough to do this. Well, that's why I'm here. I'm here to become good enough to handle this, and that's my goal still today. My goal with training is to be good enough to handle when a guy is putting pressure. That's my bar. And that, I feel like, as far as taking care of myself, applying jiu-jitsu to a more self-defense aspect or on the streets for safety, I feel like that's the bar you'd want. You want to compare yourself against a really good opponent, somebody, you know, somebody who's trying to hurt you. That's what I want my bar to be at, and that's what I seek. So I don't have a problem with rolling with guys or fighting with guys. That's okay. Now there's a little distinction here. There's some guys that do not have control and spatial awareness and some common sense. So you can pick out which of those guys are safe and not safe to roll with because, you know, say I'm training for a competition. There are some guys you don't want to roll with leading up to competition because they're going to do something stupid and they're going to hurt you just from being rough and stupid. So... there's a separation between, like, okay, for my current goals, I cannot roll with you because you're not safe. And that is totally okay. Be like, you know what, I'm not rolling you, you're not safe. Or if I'm not comfortable with you, like, that's my level, that's okay. Don't feel like it's not okay that you're not willing to fight every spazzy, crazy white belt that there is. Like, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Just thought I'd throw that in.
And have you always felt supported and seen throughout your full-time athletic career?
What do you mean by seen?
By people around you, by people in different shows, organizers, the public.
Okay, interesting. I think I take that question in two ways. Have I been seen by my team? Have I been adequately and sufficiently helped and supported? Have I been seen by my team? Yes, yes, my team has always taken care of me. Now, have I been seen as in a public eye and a public knowledge by promoters, promotions, and sponsors and things like that? No. Only just barely have I started to get some sort of attention with that. And it, like, I hadn't set out to make a particular goal to be like, I want to be well known by everyone. All the promoters are going to know who I am. Like, I had not made a goal like that. My idea was to just train, was to perform. I wasn't competing for attention. I was competing for me, for what I wanted to accomplish. But I think it's not a bad thing, especially if you know what you would be connecting with them for. Like, I don't think that's a bad thing. But that was never my goal. Is never my first thought when it comes to training is, hey, I need to get their attention. I was like, I'm here to fight people. If you see me, great. And to a degree, you don't necessarily need to, because, well, and consider what I say here. Actions speak louder than words. Your performance will speak more volumes than reaching out. But I do think making the connections is very helpful for networking. But I would rather be the fighter that's really good and reaches out here and there than the fighter that's like, man, who's exceptional at marketing. I would rather have those skills, I think. But there's no reason in my mind also that you shouldn't do both. I'm very ambitious, and I think, okay, here's another field or realm that, you know, I don't have as much experience in, and I don't have as much skills in. Okay, I need to up that. I'm very ambitious about, like, networking, marketing, reaching out to people, sponsors, promoters. Yeah, I need to be doing a lot of that, and I'm going to learn how to be really good at it.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
It is a skill. It's not... I think some people sort of naturally are quite good at it, but I think most people who are good, it's because they've learned it as a skill. I've read... on when I was like looking you up and trying to find some information, that you have a really, really good relationship with your coach as well as your team. Can you talk a little bit about that and how that's been a part of your journey?
Gotcha, yeah. So I made a great speech about my team and the lengths they went through to support me and to raise me up, and I'm very proud of them. I'm very proud of the consistency in my training partners and showing up to help me, even when it's not their training camp or they're not also a part of, you know, the fight that I'm going to. I've been very grateful to them sticking it out. You know, anxiety for them to deal with. It's training, hard training for them to deal with their recovery as well. And then my coach, especially Eddie, for planning all of the trainings and pulling guys from over here to give me what he thinks or what he knows that I need for fights. Like, that has been something that's been going on for years, is my team's been dedicated to helping me. And I hope that I've expressed back that I'm dedicated to helping them too. And that's what I want. And I think it's been like that since I was younger. My coach, he kind of stepped into helping me outside in my regular life and being like a figure for me to look up to and to talk to outside of training. So naturally, I would imagine with a closer relationship, there's a little bit more care with attention to detail and your success and what you can do and support. And that's not had with every coach. That's not, you know, that's not normal. That's not typical. And I think I'm very fortunate to have had a coach that cares about me personally, because as I've recently discovered too, that's really not very normal, or at least with some of the people I've talked to, and I haven't talked to very many people, but yeah, I think I'm really fortunate to have had that, and I'm proud that they've kind of raised me up from the day one. And it makes me feel really, like I have really strong ties with them. They mean a lot to me, and I want to be able to help them the same way that they've helped me and show my gratitude back. Because look where I'm getting. Mm. And that doesn't come from just me. I mean, if you could become a world champion, if you could become anything by sitting at your house and doing drills on a bag by yourself, I just don't think it's quite the same as when you have a team. People who are pushing you, people who know you, people who want the best for you, and they want you to get to a level of success, and they can brainstorm different ideas and put different skills together to create something that is beautiful. So much joy is found in it.
It sounds that you're in a really, really nurturing and safe environment, which is great.
Well, so it has its struggles as well. Like, I don't want to provide an Instagram account of this perfect training life that I have. It's not. I don't think anybody's is. There's always some ups and downs, gives and takes. There's always some things that are, like, unideal. But you can always work on those things. So don't get the idea in your head that it's all sunshine and rainbows. No, there's plenty of our own problems we got to work through with communication and consistency. And those are a lot of problems.
So, moving on to a question about, as a seasoned competitor, really high level, you've been on so many shows. Have you found it's the pay for men and women are equal within that? And everyone has very differing opinions about this, because obviously there's less women, maybe in a bracket, or maybe there's sort of a bit of discrimination against women on shows because people want to bring in these high level men or whatever. Like, what's your experience of that?
What's my experience? I have some thoughts. I don't have tons of experience with, like, the disparity between men and women and how much they're paid. You know, I've just started to become a paid athlete. I think a couple of the thoughts I think I want to preface this with, or just some things I consider, is what's the difference in level between the highest competitor in the men's jiu-jitsu and the highest competitor in the women's jiu-jitsu? Like, what's the difference in level there? Something else I think is, I feel like men have been dedicated and committed to jiu-jitsu a little bit longer than women have been, maybe a lot even, I would argue a lot. I think they've had more time to develop in jiu-jitsu and to push the level of jiu-jitsu, and that's not something you want to discredit, because it's evident. And I think, and I'm starting to see more about this as I go different places and talk to people, women are dedicated to jiu-jitsu, but maybe they prioritize their family more than jiu-jitsu. And I don't know if I would argue that men prioritize their family more than jiu-jitsu, but I actually don't know. The impression I get is that women have a lot of things that they're also taking care of, and a lot of that has to do with their family and their kids. And it's really hard to have a competitive career in jiu-jitsu and to be taking care of kids. That's difficult. And I think there's a lot of value in a good family, an incredible amount of value, and that should never, never, ever be overlooked. And I don't know if I would say it's a bad thing that maybe women are more committed to their family than to a jiu-jitsu career. Heck, I would argue that's a good thing, that that's a very valuable and a very important thing to society. So, and obviously, men cannot have babies, or at least that's traditional society. I don't know what science can do nowadays, but men cannot have babies, and women are natural caretakers. And not that men can't be naturally nurturing and caretakers as well, but it just seems like women are given more responsibility, and I think we choose to take more responsibility and priority in our families than in a competitive career. Now, it'd be really interesting to see a woman do both those things and what that would look like. But, so those are a couple of the thoughts I had about the disparity between men and women's jiu-jitsu, because guys are, they have, in a way, more dedication towards jiu-jitsu as far as capability and time and all these things go, and I really don't know what to say about it. I think men are paid more, okay, men have been training, I personally feel like men's jiu-jitsu is more developed than women's jiu-jitsu is. But, you know, the more I talk to some of the high-level jiu-jitsu women, the high-level jiu-jitsu men, maybe not. However, all that being said, all those interesting thoughts and considerations I have, should men and women be paid the same for jiu-jitsu? I think so. I think if you're bringing out a high level of performance, you're drawing in a crowd, these are your typical considerations for payment. Yeah, I think so. Like, oh, just because you're a female, say you drew in the same amount of crowd and you put on a great show. Oh, but just because you're female, we're going to pay you less. Lame. I think I don't think women should be paid less than men, but I do think that, I think women are not paid as much as they should be paid for jiu-jitsu currently. I think that should be upped a little bit. Like, there doesn't have to be such a disparity or such a gap in men's pay and women's pay if we're bringing out so much of a show and the competitiveness and the time and effort it takes to work up to that level, especially considering that we are held responsible from society and from ourselves to take care of a family also. So we should be paid less? No, in fact, in some ways, I think if you're a woman and you're having a jiu-jitsu career, you are sacrificing, I don't know if I would say more, but in a way, more to be doing jiu-jitsu and to not be having a family. That's an arguable point.
Mm-hmm.
These are just things I consider. I don't feel like I have really heavy opinions, but I'm just collecting all this information as I meet people, and I'm so curious to learn more about it. But I do think women should be paid a little bit more. Like, when there's a disparity of, like, $30,000 between who won the women's division and the men's division, that's kind of like, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, now, I do think more women could do jiu-jitsu. I do think so. The more women compete, the more prevalent it is. But like I said, also, there's a sacrifice and a time commitment to competitive jiu-jitsu career and to a family or another career, and it's just a sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
It's really complicated.
It is. And you have said some really, I think thoughts are great, because often people have very strong sort of opinions, but, you know, you've named some lots of different parts of the puzzle.
I'm sure there's many I'm not even recognizing yet. I'm curious to see the ins and outs and the extent of this topic.
Let's focus on Polaris. So, who are you most excited to fight against?
Okay, I think Jada and Fionn, of course. Like, I'm excited to... And I think... Let me start with Jada first. Jada and I think we're similar, and so it'll be interesting. I like her too. I'm just excited. If we end up fighting, I'd be excited to fight her and see how we do together. Same thing with Fionn. I think Fionn and I, we both like to put pressure or to like be really active, and I think that would make for a great fight. And I think both of us, like, we want to commit to fighting. Like, for me personally, when I fight, I'm there to fight. I would say I'm there to win too. Like, I'm trying, like everyone's trying to win, but like, I'm there more to fight than I am to win. So, and I wonder if when I see Fionn fight, her drive to keep moving and active during the fight, I think we'll match up that way, and I think that would be just a fun and exciting fight. I'd love to see how we match up.
It's going to be amazing. But you have fought Elizabeth, Claire and Maggie Grindati before. Did those sort of experiences come into any of your training?
What do you mean when you said that?
So you fought them before, so you might know the kind of thing they might want to do. You might understand like their strengths and weaknesses a little bit, their strategies. Is that something that you've been thinking about?
Gotcha. So yeah, I think I consider my previous fights with them, and I consider what's typical for them. I don't consider it more than I consider like how I'm going to do things, because I believe in going into the fight and doing you. But yeah, those are considerations, and I never hold them as solid either, though. Like, oh, okay, they typically play like this or whatever. I never hold those as solid, because people are growing and adapting and changing all the time. So it's like, oh, okay, this might happen. Something else might happen. But my consideration is like, okay, what am I going to do?
Lovely. No, it's going to be super exciting, and we can't wait to watch it on the night. So the last question, do you have any other questions, Shanti? Lovely. The last question we ask everybody is, what are you fighting for? So Amy, as Amy, what are you fighting for?
What is Amy fighting for? I think I'm fighting to learn. I want to seek out experience. I want to seek out growth. I want to have experiences that change me, that make me something better than I was. And then I want to be able to share that with other people and share the experience or the joy that comes from them having learned some of the same things or seen some of the same things that I've had. I think that's probably the goal behind every fight.
That is beautiful. Oh, thank you so much for sharing. That's really lovely.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you
for listening to this episode of the Women Who Fight podcast, and credit to Will Grant for being our songwriter and sound editor. Please subscribe and share and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at womenwhofight.co.uk, and check out our website for more content.